Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, you're very welcome back. Roisin Murphy is one of the coolest people Ireland has ever produced. Full stop. Such is her singularity as an artist. She didn't follow in anyone's footsteps and nobody's managed to emulate her since. The disco queen herself, she brings her 30 years of mega hits home to Wicklow for the very first time. She's headlining the Beyond the Pale weekend. That's happening in June. And on the side, she campaigns for an arts centre in her native Arklow. Roisin Murphy, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You're in Ibiza right now.
I am, yeah.
Is it beautiful there?
It is. The sun is shining. It's lovely.
Oh, that's perfect. And I know you're very familiar with the island. What is it like these days? Is it a sleepy place now? Has it calmed down from the party days?
It's starting to wake up a little bit now. but it's very sleepy during the winter, which is a lovely time, actually, to be here.
Oh, wow. I don't know if you read Matt Haig's novel, The Life Impossible, and it's all about the arts and heritage of Ibiza. It's a very cultured place.
No, I haven't read that, but that does sound interesting.
That's a hot recommendation for you. Far from Arklow, because Arklow is a place we don't have a kind of a grip on in Ireland, I don't think. We don't know it very well.
You haven't a grip on it. Arklow, yeah, Arklow's a great place, brilliant place to grow up. Full of wonderful people. I was just there a few weeks ago, like three weeks ago. And it's still home.
Where do you hang out when you go home?
I hang out in the Harbour Bar in Tinahask in Arklow.
And you sing there occasionally?
If they let me.
Do they say no sometimes to you?
They get fairly pissed off if they're not in the humour.
There's a Harbour Bar in Bray, but there's one in Arklow, lesser known, but you've put it on the map. What was your life like growing up? What was your childhood like in Arklow?
It was great, actually. It was a brilliant place to be a kid. And I was surrounded by music. Mm-hmm. I had a great musician in my family, a guy called Jim Turl. And he had several bands. He had a jazz band that I used to go and watch every Sunday during the summer. They have an all-day effort every Sunday. And I grew up listening to live music. I grew up listening to people singing all the time. And I had a fabulous family on both sides. Yeah. So, yeah, I was very lucky to grow up there. I consider myself lucky.
And your father, he worked very hard. I think you said in an interview somewhere that he fitted out maybe a quarter of the pubs in Ireland.
He did. He worked hard and he played hard.
And you love being the youngster in pubs, surrounded by older people and listening to them.
Yeah, I did. I wonder if, is that still, do you think that's still the case as much as it was then? I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
There's so much sitting around in the pub with your potatoes and your red lemonade as much as there was in those days.
Not so much. And your mum, she was an antiques collector?
She was a dealer, yes. She was an antique dealer.
Are you a dealer as well at times?
A wheeler and a dealer. So you have to be, don't
you?
Yes,
you do. But there was loads of music. And then the family was uprooted. What age were you when the family left Wicklow?
I was 12 when we went to Manchester.
Wow. That was a big severance in your life, I'd imagine.
It was a big thing, but I really embraced it.
I
liked the new start and the whole kind of different culture and the shopping in Manchester. There wasn't much to buy in Arklow or try on. When I went to Manchester first, I used to go to Debenhams quite regularly and just spend hours in there trying on dresses and what have you. So, yeah, it was a big change for me. But we had lots of family in Manchester. Mm-hmm. We have a big kind of... there's an annex of the family that are from Manchester and... it's a great town.
Did it feel Irish anyway in Manchester?
It did. I went to a Catholic school and we had lots of family, Irish family that were already ensconced in Manchester.
Because at 12, obviously you lose your friends in Arklow, but you're saying the family, there were plenty of cousins, people to be friends with over there.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I had been to Manchester a lot on holidays anyway, so I was already familiar with it.
Also, Manchester had, I think what you've described previously, is a community of weirdos.
That's what I found, yes. Yeah. I was about sort of 14, I think, when I started going to see live music with my little group of friends who were, would identify as weirdos, I guess, in those days.
And those weirdos became your home.
Exactly. And they became my education in many ways.
Do you remember the first gig you saw in Manchester, or what kind of really struck you?
Well, I went to see, the main one was the Sonic Youth gig, which changed everything for me. And I was 14, and that was when, after I'd seen Sonic Youth, I really threw myself into the music scene. I really threw myself into buying records and, you know, never thinking that I was going to make music, but just being really obsessed with it. And my little group of friends were all obsessed with it. So it was something to do.
It was your way of life. And meanwhile, around this time, your family moved back to Wicklow.
Yes, bit by bit. Yeah. Yeah.
But you stay.
I stayed. Yes.
You were only about 15, I think. Was that considered very unusual at the time?
It was. Yeah. It was not quite as unusual as it is now.
Yeah.
It's kind of totally unbelievable now, but it was, it was unusual then too, I suppose.
And here you were doing things your way. That was probably the start of you being such an independent artist and having your own self-drive, I'd imagine.
It was a big moment for me to make that decision. I could have gone back to Ireland with my mother, but because I was just so happy with my little gang of mates and because it was possible for me, I mean, I was able to get a little apartment and the government paid for it, and I carried on and I did my A-levels and I stayed in the same area, and I was very close to, you know, just geographically to friends and friends' mums, and you know, I was actually quite taken care of, really.
You must be amazed at yourself, though, looking back at a 15-year-old.
I am. Yeah. I draw on that strength whenever I need it, you know. Whenever I think things might get too much for me, I think, well, geez, you managed when you were 15 in Manchester, so.
You've done worse, says you.
Yeah.
At what stage then you decide, right, I'm going to do this for a living, this is my life?
Well, I was 19 when I met Mark Bryden, who was my partner in Moloco, but also my partner. He, you know, we fell in love and started making music immediately. But not in a way where I thought I was a serious singer or anything. In the beginning, it was just being very experimental and playing with characters and ideas and stuff, but rather than thinking of myself as some sort of serious singer. And I was really surprised that we got a record contract fairly quickly. And I was surprised that Mark Bryden, who was a proper producer and all, and was a good bit older than me, wanted to do it. I couldn't believe it, to be honest. But and it was like an amazing gift.
And it was kind of an instant formation, wasn't it, Moloco? And your chat
it was.
Up, your chat up line became quite a
it was my
statement.
Chat up line that got me there. Yeah. I sidled up beside him in a party in Sheffield and said, "Do you like my tight sweater? See how it fits my body." I was saying this thing over and over again that night. And he was like, "I want to record you saying that." And that was the beginning of everything.
He did. And that was the title of, it was the title of the album, or was it the title of the single?
Do You Like My Tight Sweater became the title of the album. Yeah. Yes.
Extraordinary. And then the big hits follow. Does the style come instantly, or when do you become the style icon?
I always loved clothes. Always, even in Arklow. I mean, I used to raid me Auntie Linda's closet for all her like little 60s dresses, and she had been a beauty queen and she'd saved everything, and she had crowns and dresses and everything. So I used to prance around in Arklow in her wedding dress.
Really? Did she
I
know about it?
I loved clothes. I didn't have many, and I certainly, you know, wasn't spoiled that way, but I was obsessed with clothes and I loved movies and things like that. So my mum and me used to watch movies and we'd draw the dresses afterwards, you know, we'd watch something, you know, some period pieces. And I don't know, I just grew up knowing about clothes as well, because my aunts in Dublin were dressmakers. They were all my mother's grandfather was a tailor and everybody knew how to make clothes. And so, yeah, there was a lot of talk about clothes and fabrics and colours and styles. And it just, I was just brought up around it. It was
when you were
something that was in me.
When you were putting on the clothes, did you see them as a costume for yourself? Were you trying to be somebody else or emulate someone you saw in a film?
I would be very, yes, I would be a bit fantastical about it, yeah. The fantasies would grow and, you know, I'd dress up as things and, yeah, I was never afraid to be that way, you know.
thank goodness, says you, because it's such an important part of, particularly your live performances, the fashion.
It is, yeah, it can be. fashion, costume, fantasy, I suppose, yeah. And characterization and telling stories. And it's just the sort of handiest thing you can grab, really, isn't it, to start telling stories with.
It must be a nightmare for the roadies.
I have a roadie, yes. I don't have like a fancy wardrobe person because
really?
it's too hectic. I had tried once or twice and they kind of end up pulling their hair out. So now for the last several years, I have a guy called Simon Phillips who's my roadie.
Yeah.
He's my specific roadie and he's a big, strong chap that carries all these suitcases and he's learned to steam, he's learned to hem.
Wow.
And people are quite surprised when I turn up with him.
A miser suitcase. I always think trunks for those outfits because, you know, you can't really sit down in a lot of the costumes for fear of crushing the
shape. Some of the suitcases only have one thing in them, yes.
Yeah, okay, that's the way to travel. So there's no Roisin Murphy department working day and night and travelling around with you. It's basically you and a roadie.
It's me and a roadie, but he is my department, yes.
Yeah, okay.
He's my everything.
You don't have to remember the movies that kind of struck you because the costuming seems to come from the movies before you're dressing up your aunt's clothes.
I was movie obsessed as a kid, yeah. Oh. And so my mum was too. So that was something we shared very much.
You set a standard with the fashion that plenty of people are following now, Lady Gaga and Sam Smith and so on. The men rarely don elaborate clothing, don't they? Are they lucky or are they missing out?
I think there's a bit of both there, for sure. I love men's clothes too. And, and I kind of dress more like that in real life, you know. I wear trousers all the time and shirts and, yeah, I love men's clothes as well as women's. I love all clothes.
You do?
I should say it's love-hate because you have to take care of them all as well. It's a big job.
You can fall out with clothes as well, that's for sure.
You can.
I presume the drama of the style means that when you're in your, whatever counts as civilian clothes for Roisin Murphy, that people don't probably spot you as much on the street.
That's right, I go under the radar, for sure.
So it's a mask on stage in many ways.
No, it's not a mask. It's something I use to tell stories with or even to tell the truth with, you know. I think you can mask up quite easily by just wearing T-shirts and jeans and being like, I'm very, very authentic. That in itself can be nonsense, you know, as well. So I don't know. I mean, I think in the beginning, I thought I came into the music industry in the 90s and we had like grunge and stuff like that. And everything was very serious and very underplayed. And I reacted to that, you know, I reacted against it.
You certainly did. You went back recently, well, was it a week ago or 2 weeks ago, you said you were back in Arklow. You've been calling for an art centre in Arklow. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, I think there's a great opportunity. We have a harbour down there that's kind of the most, you know, romantic place in Arklow. And there's nothing going on down there and there's lots of warehouses and stuff like that. And I just thought it would be a great place to, you know, have like a Brooklyn down there, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just an idea, basically.
And it would be kind of full circle for you, wouldn't it? Because your grandfather was deeply involved in bringing music to the town.
He was, yeah, absolutely. My grandfather, my mother's father, started by having a marquee. So he used to throw dances in the marquee in Arklow, which became very famous and everybody came down to it. And then he built a ballroom. And then he built the cinema. He built the centre, which was another place for music and culture. He built a big restaurant called Bumtaz, which is what was still in the family when I was growing up. He brought a lot of entertainment to Arklow, exactly.
Bill Kavanagh was his name.
That's right.
What's the shopping like in Arklow these days?
Well, we have TK Maxx, which I always have a little stroll through I'm there, but you never know what you're going to get.
I'm still recovering from the fact that you found your fashion sense in Debenhams. It's not what we
the cocktail dresses in the 80s in Debenhams. It was great.
And now it's TK Maxx. Oh, no. Come here, when you talk about your granddad there and bringing the marquee and the ballroom to Arklow, Grim Ireland really kind of survived because of dancing, and the dance spaces are closing one after the other in Ireland and indeed across Britain as well. We need to bring this back. I'm sure you would agree with this.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like the young people are as interested in it as we were. That's kind of, I'm starting to sound like an old one. We used to have to make our own. We used to have to make our own entertainment.
Put on your auntie's wedding dress and dance around the room. But I think they want to dance. They just don't have the spaces for it, and they're not as interested in drinking. So, there isn't the pull factor for them if there isn't just a dance space, maybe.
Well, I mean, they used to dance at tea dances, didn't they? Just to go and have a few cups of tea and dance all night.
Alcohol-free.
Not in my day. I'm not that old.
I wasn't absolutely not suggesting. You're going home this summer. It is true, isn't it? You haven't actually done a full live show in Wicklow ever before.
That's right, yeah.
Wow. Beyond the Pale Festival. So there'll be dancing opportunities for all comers.
All kinds of dancing and all kinds of music. It's a real mix. It looks like it's going to be a great festival.
Yeah, that's in the middle of June. It'll be a family occasion for you as well, I presume.
It will. Hopefully my Auntie Linda will stick by her promise and turn up, because she's become a bit of a fan favourite, because I've had her on my Instagram a few times and they're all looking forward to meeting her.
Do you still have some of her dresses?
No, God. In fact, she, if you get her going on that, she gets a bit upset, because I did raid that bit by bit by bit. I just emptied her wardrobe and her husband's, which was my Uncle Jim, which was the musician.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You emptied all those closets. There's Linda dress ups for the shows now. She presumably still has glamour.
Oh, yeah, she'll put a bit of effort in, of course. Yeah.
For you, of course. We inevitably get these messages when you talk about, but I worked with Roisin's dad when he had the furniture shop in Arklow. A truly wonderful man, full of life and wisdom. That's from Paul.
Ah, lovely. Yeah.
Nice to have those memories.
Yeah, he's very missed me, dad.
Only in recent years as well.
Yeah, he died a few years ago, two or three years ago.
But you'll get those stories when you come back for Beyond the Pale. Another one says, love Roisin, have danced at her gigs, dressed expressively as only a Roisin Murphy gig would allow. That's from Kay.
I love it when people make an effort when they come to the gigs.
They do.
Yeah.
If you're making the effort, I suppose the rest of us have to as well. Listen, an absolute pleasure chatting to you this morning.
Thank you.
We let you go back into the beauty of Ibiza there. And they're all looking forward to welcoming you back to Wicklow in the middle of June.
Thank you so much.
June 13th to the 15th, you're headlining the Saturday night Beyond the Pale. It's beyondthepale.ie is a place for tickets. Roisin Murphy, good morning to you.
Good morning, dear.
Slán.
Email oliver@rte.ie.